For Teaching and Learning with Technology at Penn State, this is Jamie Oberdick with the February edition of Conversations, the Senior Director Eye View of Education Technology at Penn State. For our conversation this month, I talked to Cole Complice, Senior Director of Teaching and Learning with Technology, about how technology has changed libraries. Libraries are not dead because of technology, far from it. And proof of this can be found in the new Tombros and McWhirter Knowledge Commons in Petit Library. The facility combines learning spaces and technology to create a cutting-edge educational facility. I talked to Cole about a class he is teaching in the Knowledge Commons with his colleague and Penn State faculty member Scott McDonald, the role of libraries in the modern world of education, and even how technology is making the library a much more active and, yes, noisier place. Okay, I'm here with Cole Complice. Cole, talk a little bit about the class that you're going to start teaching and where you're teaching it, because that's also very interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. So the class that I'm teaching, and I co-teach it with Scott McDonald from the College of Education. He's an associate professor of science education and curriculum instruction. And he's also the director of the new Innovation Studio in the College of Ed, which is a really interesting endeavor that maybe in a future podcast we can talk
about. Okay.
So the class is, they changed the number on us this year. It's now CI 598, used to be CI 597, but it's called Disruptive Technologies for Teaching and Learning.
Yeah.
And it's a graduate seminar. So usually in the past we've had, I think the first time we did it, we had 24 students. Last time we did it, we had 18. Interestingly enough, we have 8 students enrolled this time.
Right.
So it's interesting because it's forced us to rethink our design, because we've always done these big team things where you can have 4 or 5 different teams working on projects,
right.
But now we're only going to have 2 teams. Today's the first day of class. And we're going to be teaching in chambers in the new Innovation Studio classroom.
Okay.
But there were some problems with the air handlers, so we won't be able to be in that classroom until spring break. Which sent us scrambling at the last minute because we have sort of unique technology needs. It's not like we need all the students to have computers in front of them all the time, because the class is really more about community identity and design and reading and discussing and things of that nature. But we do explore a lot of technologies, and we needed some things, so we couldn't find a classroom. So we ended up asking the folks at the university library if we could use the new classroom in the Knowledge Commons,
right?
Which is in the Petit side of Petit Paterno Library. It's beautiful. If you've not been over there, you've got to go. I mean, I was there yesterday to get a tour of the classroom and everything, and TLT has invested an amazing amount of time, energy, effort, and resources into it. I mean, ITS in general. I mean, this has truly been an amazing partnership with the libraries. And we walked into the classroom yesterday, and it's really wild.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the classroom design is very different. And the interesting thing is, the class, we're also going to try to do an expose on and really expose the notion of physical learning spaces as it relates to the confluence of technology and its influence on community identity and design specifically around teaching design.
Okay.
So what's crazy is, you know, we've been watching over the last 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 months the Occupy Wall Street movement.
Right.
And Scott and I started to think, last semester there was an article right at the beginning of the semester from Onward State that listed the 10 worst classrooms on campus.
I remember that.
Remember that, right?
Yeah, right.
And so Scott and I started thinking about that, and we started thinking about the context of Occupy Wall Street, and we started to think about how could we have our students switch from focusing exclusively on the connections between technology and disruptive technologies, emergent technologies, and their relationship to community and identity and design, over towards physical space, right?
Okay.
So virtual space are part of the teaching and learning environment,
okay.
But traditionally and historically, physical space has been a bigger part of that, right?
Yeah, right.
And so we've decided we have a big component of our class that starts in the fourth week called Occupy Learning. And what we've done is we've identified what we think are the 10 worst classrooms on campus and the 10 largest classrooms on campus, and we're sending our students out to collect artifacts about those rooms. So do observations around what kind of teaching goes on in those rooms,
mm-hmm.
Talk to students and interview them, video, audio,
okay.
Talk to faculty in video and audio, take photos of them, write little mini reports. So all these rooms will have their own little mini report. And then they'll be placed on a map, geotagged, all the entries, all these little artifacts, like digital posters, if you will. And then teams will have to talk about those and what they learned and what this space design and how it influences what kind of learning and what kind of teaching goes on in these environments. So we've taken our traditional course, which has always been very heavy on the research side, and the readings have been always very high level, and the conversations have been very high level. And then we've mixed technology in there. Now we're also going to add in this idea of physical space design and how it influences teaching and learning. So we think it's going to be a relatively ambitious but really engaging experience.
Could this be something that the university itself kind of can look at and maybe learn more about how its spaces and how it can redesign its spaces, do you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, so, as you know, TLT, we have classroom and lab computing.
Sure.
And so we have heavy influence into what happens in our classrooms and labs. And one of the things, I sit on UCIF, which is the University Committee on Instructional Facilities. And one of the things we're talking about doing is taking these final reports and inviting the UCIF members to them. Uh-huh. So they can actually see firsthand graduate students dissecting these learning environments and talking to us about what kind of pedagogies they support, what kind of activities they support, what kind of teaching practice they support, what they could be thinking about to challenge the traditional notion of the classrooms. So I think it's going to be really kind of interesting. So it's a little risky for me, right, as somebody who's an administrator and I'm actively promoting the critique of the environments that I myself design, manage, and oversee. But I think it's a critical step in thinking about what comes next.
Yeah.
When I came into this position a year ago, I sat down with Kevin Rooney, our CIO and Vice Provost for Information Technology, and I asked him, so what are the 3 to 5 things that I need to focus my energy on? Mm-hmm. You know, essentially, what do I have to do to not lose my job?
Right.
You know, and the items on the list really surprised me. You know, course management system, keeping that active, engaging, and running and manageable was one of them. Printing, thinking about where printing goes. Printing is a huge cost for us.
Yeah.
And it's also becoming, in my opinion, an outmoded approach. You talk to a student of ours, Zach,
yes,
who talked about the iPad and the way that he, and I'm sure that podcast and story will be available soon, but the way he used an iPad to overcome just an unbelievable amount of printing costs. So printing was one of them.
Right.
But what was interesting was Kevin wanted me to have a plan for 3 to 5 years. What does the computer lab look like? What does a classroom look like? Should we be continuing to put 200 Windows machines in a big room where everybody comes in and sits down to do work?
Right.
You know, we're not sure about those kinds of things. So part of the idea of this class is to help inform my own practice, right? So you hear a lot of people say, my research is my teaching.
Right.
Right. But also in this case, the teaching becomes a component of the research, right, and it informs practice.
Right.
And it's really the reason why I continue to teach. I mean, I literally have absolutely no time to teach, but if I didn't do it, I would lose touch with what's really going on in and around the classrooms, right? So, of course, it informs. I mean, every time I teach, I learn something new about what it is that we do here at the university well, and I learn probably 50 different things about what we do here at the university poorly.
Right.
And then we actively work to address those things.
Okay.
And I think there's no better way to do that than to, you know, firsthand. I mean, we do lots of surveys, as you know.
Yeah.
But in my mind, a survey never really contextualizes the challenges and the issues that you have the respondents reporting. You know what I mean by that, right?
Right. You have to go out and actually
You have to live it, yeah, right? I mean, I can remember you going to visit different parts of campus for different stories that you were working on and coming back and saying, that was incredible. I can't believe we do this at Penn State. We have these resources. But you don't get that unless you actually go out and you talk to the people who designed the space or live in the space. And the same holds true for our teaching and learning environments.
Right. Now, one thing, speaking of environment, it's kind of interesting. The class that you and Scott teach is in a really interesting environment, from what I understand. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's in the Knowledge Commons classroom, which is actually interesting. We partnered with the libraries on this space.
Right.
Chris Millay, who's a member of Education Technology Services, was a member of the design group that put it together. The room really supports different types of classroom activity. So the room is organized in an X. Mm-hmm. There's no fixed podium in the room, so it's very, very different than what we're accustomed to. It has a movable podium in the front. It's organized in an X. There are five different screens in the room that you can project to. So there's always a view. So if you think about an X, and if I'm the instructor and I'm standing in the middle, in a traditional room, there would only be projection of the front.
Right.
But now, if I'm sitting in an X and I'm looking into the middle, there are screens behind each leg of the X,
okay,
as well as the middle. So no matter where I'm sitting, I'm looking at both the instructor and the content that's being presented
in
the room. Whiteboards all around the room. So the idea is to break people off quickly, talk about a topic, and say, okay, let's move from passive mode into active mode. Okay, turn your chair around. There's a wall of whiteboards there. I want you to go organize that. And then there's a screen right next to you, so you can then hit a button and switch and show what you want to show over there.
Uh-huh.
So you move students very quickly from sort of passive engagement to active engagement. And so part of what we're trying to do, Scott and I, and it's funny because we have librarians that are going to sit through the class to observe, to see the kinds of practice that we use in the room.
Right.
To see how we actually take advantage of the design of the physical space.
Yeah.
Because this space is designed pretty much around a concept that Steelcase has been talking about for many years, and that's this sort of active classroom engagement. And I traveled to Steelcase with Scott, I think last spring, and we sat through sort of a demonstration of how you would actually take advantage of this space. And it was really intriguing to watch this master teacher who understands the environment.
Right.
Go from like lecture to having his students engage in action,
right,
to bringing them back together, to mixing up their teams. You know, everything's movable. The chairs are on wheels, so you can move around quickly. But it's a radical departure from what we typically do.
Right.
Right. What we typically see is, Jamie, you're the instructor. You stand in front of the room at a podium,
uh-huh,
position of power. You click your mouse button and you change these slides up there.
Right. Right.
Now we're going in this whole different direction. The other thing the room has is it has a computer that can project, but then there's an iPad in the room. And the iPad is really a giant remote control for the computer. So not only can you run your slideshow from there, but if try to imagine that my iPad then has the same screen as the Mac at the podium does.
Right.
And so I can tap on Safari, and it doesn't launch iPad Safari. It launches Safari on the room machine.
Okay.
And then I can tap a toolbar and it comes down, and then I can choose different tools so that I can annotate the web if I want to.
Right.
So I can play a YouTube video, and I can say, okay, now what are the five biggest things that we took away from this? And right on the Safari screen, I can write.
Oh, that's great.
One, and then boom, 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 and then record that and play that back as a standalone movie if I wanted to. So
that
I can embed that into a blog space or Angel or something like that.
Sure.
So we don't quite yet know the full affordances of the classroom, but that's going to be part of the fun, right? So we
mm-hmm.
have this emphasis on space design and disruption and all these other kinds of things, and we're going to be in this room that no one's ever taught in before. I mean, Scott and I we were in the room and we stayed an hour after our meeting yesterday from 5 to 6 to do some design work on the course, and it was sort of kind of crazy because we were like, man, we're the first people to write on these whiteboards in here.
Oh, that's
right?
Great. Yeah.
So we're sort of breaking this room and at the same time retraining our own brains around the kinds of teaching practice that we're going to engage in with this space. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a big challenge, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
That's really interesting to me that the change in the room design is so radical that it's actually helpful to be actually in the classroom to do the planning, which is pretty unusual.
It is, that's a really interesting insight. You know, I hadn't thought about that, but until you just said that. But Scott and I needed to be in that room to be able to chart how we were going to address some of the challenges. I mean, just because there are screens everywhere doesn't necessarily mean that you want to use them all.
Yeah.
And so we were even talking about, okay, where do we think we're going to position ourselves in this room?
Yeah.
Right? Because even in the previous semesters, we've taught in 236 chambers, which is, it's a departure from rows, but it's a U-shaped room. And Scott and I always sat up at the front right of the classroom, and we didn't really stand up and present. We just sat and talked. This room challenges that notion. So even being in the room, we thought about how we were going to structure our own physical location, like our physical presence. Where did it make most sense for Scott to set up relative to me, relative to these 8 students that are going to be in the room, relative to now we have 2 librarians. Chris Millay and his GA are going to be there to watch how we're going to use the space. We have Ryan from the Media Commons who's going to be there watching and observing. So not only do we have the 8 people in the class, we have at least another 5 people that are going to be sort of like these, somewhere between active and passive participants in the class.
Right.
And what's funny is Chris took this class when I taught it 2 years ago. So Chris Millay has been through this class. So I'm curious to see if he can control his urges to participate in the class, right? So, and we invite people to participate.
Sure.
I mean, I'd love to have 20 people in the class. It's just that we have 8. But we're going to be using online tools as well. We'll have a Twitter hashtag that we'll establish, and we'll be tweeting out different things so people can follow along and participate in those kinds of things. So.
It's a great mashup of physical and virtual from the way it sounds.
That's the goal. We'll see, right? Scott and I call this, we always call this class, this is a grand experiment, right? Every semester something blows our mind.
Right.
And every semester we learn so much from going through this process of delivering what we had once done, redesigning on the fly, reflecting on what was good and what was bad, and then rethinking the whole thing on the other side.
So how do you sell something like this to a faculty member who may be skeptical? Why?
Otherwise? What's at the class? Like the physical design of the class?
The design, all of this change... Why is the change important?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the class Scott and I teach is always very well received, not just by students, but by our colleagues.
Okay.
And we've not taught this class and not had other faculty from other colleges or departments come and just sit and observe.
Right.
To see what's going on. But I think that there's something about the time that we live in right now that makes it interesting and a novelty. Mm-hmm. We're not quite at the point where people are willing to embrace this whole new design because we've not yet done enough of the work to understand the kind of practice that you need to have to be in that space. So part of the work that Scott and I feel like we're doing, the scholarship side of the work that we feel like we're doing, aside from the teaching, is unpacking the affordances of room designs like that.
Right.
Right. So we can better understand it. I mean, I can imagine that Scott and I will probably write an article on the other side of this about the way the physical design of the of the space impacted the course, just like we've written articles about how the virtual and the technology tools have impacted the course.
Right.
So, you know, after we taught the course the first time, we were asked to write an article about what does disruption mean and what are the kinds of technologies and what are the trends that you're seeing that are disrupting traditional teaching practice. We were able to talk about user-created content and multi-channel discourse and collaborative knowledge creation. Mm-hmm. So we were able to talk about all those kinds of things because we saw it through the use of Google Docs, we saw it through the use of Twitter, right? We saw it emerge almost organically in the class as students took advantage of technologies in ways that they typically do in a social setting,
right?
But within a learning setting. And, you know, we really leaned heavily on the concept that learning is a social enterprise.
Sure.
Right? So now I have a feeling that what's going to come out of this are all these artifacts about these learning spaces and the traditional learning spaces as they relate to these new learning spaces and what the design in the middle has to look like to get from sage on the stage, stand in front, to this notion of active versus passive.
Yeah.
And the mashup of that. And I used the word versus there, and I probably shouldn't have. You know, it's active and passive engagement, mm-hmm. right? And the ability to switch those modes like that.
Yes.
To go from let's talk, you know, as the person with the knowledge to the people who are trying to gain it, to now, okay, what do you think? Let's talk back to me. Now, go illustrate that.
Yeah.
Right? But you need physical space to allow that. But you also need to have sort of a map of a willingness to turn that loose.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And what that'll take is it'll take people writing it about it, and it'll take people talking about it, and I imagine there'll be presentations at the symposium about it, right, you know?
Yeah,
so absolutely. It's a little bit about, like, the themes that I'm hearing out of ETS these days around flipping the classroom.
Yes. Right?
That's what Scott and I are attempting to do, but we're attempting to document it and to create tangible artifacts of what it looks like to do that.
Okay.
And it's a little bit of a building off of Chris Long and I, our project called PSU Hack, right?
Yes.
We talked about at a couple of summer camps ago about what does it mean to really hack traditional pedagogy?
Yes.
Right? And it's not a negative thing. It's a really interesting, positive kind of opportunity.
You know, it's one thing it's, I'm hearing from this is, and oftentimes if I see something about educational technology in, say, the Chronicle of Higher Education, I'll see in a comment section, you know, we can't just use every new toy haphazardly.
Right.
And I think that there seems to be, there's a lot of thinking that goes into this. It's not just, oh, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. We're going to use it. It's like, well, no, do we need to use it? And coming up with how we use it most effectively.
Well, you know, my claim is that these technologies that we're all using in our everyday lives, mm-hmm. primarily social software, social tools,
yeah.
Twitter, Facebook, now Yammer, Google Docs, like
right.
these tools that we use to support the workflow of our lives
right.
and the workflow of our day-to-day enterprise, the work we do, actually, if you unpack them, they have embedded pedagogies in them.
Yes, they do.
They allow you to rethink the way that you do traditional teaching, right? And it's not about, oh, my God, Google Docs is the greatest thing ever. Let's use it.
Yes.
It's building an awareness of what it can enable and then rethinking the kinds of things you do with your students.
Right.
And, you know, I have to be honest with you. I get a little tired of people talking about, oh, we just go after the shiny new toys, right,
right.
as education technologists. Well, if you're doing that, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Because we don't go after the shiny new toys without at least a relatively decent level of understanding of a handful of embedded pedagogies.
Right, right.
We don't go out, like, we didn't, Scott and I didn't sit down in 2007 or 2008 and say, we're going to use Twitter because it's neat.
Yeah.
Right? We used Twitter because we had observed changes in the way people, audiences were participating with speakers.
Yes.
Right? Like, we were looking around at conferences and seeing Twitter streams and hashtags of people like asking questions of each other in the audience as a keynote speaker was going on. And we thought, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So basically what we're going to let people do is we're going to let them use their machines to be active with one another as learning is going on in a room.
Right.
Because remember, we're leaning on this principle that learning is a social enterprise.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I know.
So
exactly.
It wasn't like, oh, Twitter's groovy, so let's use Twitter. No, it was like Twitter's going to open up a whole other channel.
Yeah.
Like, the back channel at conferences, well, in a classroom, it's multi-channel discourse. I can raise my hand and talk,
yeah.
And when I make that comment, you can sit in the back with your Twitter and you can say, at Cole Camp Police, that was a really great comment. Have you thought about this?
Yeah.
And now you've added another layer to the discourse in the classroom.
Right.
It has nothing to do with Twitter's neat.
Yeah.
Twitter is just an enabler of a new form of pedagogy.
Right.
But you have to spend time in a classroom actively exploring and unpacking that to get there. And these people that dismiss this stuff out of hand as shiny new toys are missing the boat.
Yeah.
Education technology is a field.
Exactly.
Right? It's not a hobby.
No, it's a field.
This is a field. And the more we understand that there's a scholarship to what we do as education technologists, the sooner we can get over this BS that, oh, you're just chasing toys.
Right.
Right? If that's the way you feel, you're in the wrong field. Right? You're a hobbyist.
Yeah.
Right? You know, because you could say the same thing about a molecular biologist. Well, they're just chasing the new blah, right? No, that's their field. Their job is to unpack cells. Their job is to understand. Their job, their career is to create new thought from old.
Yeah.
We're in the same thing. We just do it in our field.
Right.
And that's why the Chronicle frustrates me and some of our colleagues frustrate me. And, you know, I hear this all the time. You guys, you know, we should be putting teaching first, not technology. Well, okay, but that's somebody else's field.
Uh-huh.
Our field is to unpack the technology
yeah.
to support these practices.
Right.
And at least that's my opinion.
And to work with the people who are.
Amen.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a great place to leave off.
Cool.
Thanks a lot for your time.
Absolutely, Jamie. It was a pleasure.
For Conversations, this is Jamie Oberdick. Thanks for listening.